Darren also gave apologies, so who else are we waiting for? Denise, are you on the call as well?
Emma, this is Alice. I talked to Denise earlier. She's going to join the call today.
Okay, good. I think as we've got quite a lot to get through, I'm just going to start, and others can join as they come in. So, Alice, could you do the roll call and start the recording?
Okay, operator, could you please start the recording?
Recording has started.
Thank you. So on the call, we've got Susan Kiwaguchi, Kathy Kleiman, James Bladel, Lynn Gudendorf, Emily Taylor, Michael Yakuchtev. We have apologies from Peter Nettlefall, Bill Smith, Lutz Donahacker, Omar Kaminski, Sharon Hammond. And for Mike and staff, we have Olaf Nording, Denise Michelle is going to join us in a couple of minutes, and Alice Johnson.
Great. Thank you very much for that, Alice. Can we adopt the agenda, please? Does anybody have any additional items to add to the agenda or any AOB?
Emily, this is Alice. I have an AOB. This is the Who Is Review Team. I can staff call just to discuss scheduling issues and so on, if that's possible.
That's fine. Yes, we'll make sure we do that before we close today. I should say I've got a hard stop at 90 minutes, so I'll be leaving the call at that point. So that's an added incentive for timeliness. Susan, do you have an AOB?
In rereading Larry Strickling's letter, the last paragraph, second to last or whatever, but where he's recommending that we add a recommendation for validation of registrant data at the time of registration, renewal, and updated contact information in response to a notice of inaccurate data. And I don't know that maybe we discussed this and I just don't remember. So if we have time, it would to go over that again.
Okay. I think it might well come up in our discussion of the recommendations, but otherwise I've made a note of it.
Okay.
Thank you. Other than that, let's adopt this agenda and move on. Can we turn our attention to the preliminary report from last week's call, dated the 4th of April? Have we got any corrections of fact or comments on that? In that case, let's adopt the preliminary report. Let me know if there are any objections. Okay, so adopted. Salmad and Seth have joined the call, so thank you for joining. Right, let's, if Denise, are you on the call yet?
Emily, this is Alice again. Denise, yes, is encountering technical difficulties, phone apparently. Okay. She'll be on as soon as she can.
Okay. In that case, let's start with the data accuracy recommendations, and we'll carry on with the discussion of recommendations and break off at a suitable point when Denise joins. Susan, do you want to just talk us through where you've got to on the data accuracy recommendations?
So on recommendation 5, I went back and reread the NORC study. And they definitely did not use unreachable. They used undeliverable and also unreliable. And then, but in really reading it through, I'm wondering whether we shouldn't change it, to the accuracy groups that are already defined. And you put, you made a good point in your email just now, Emily, where, we should also use full failure. I was just sort of looking at the undeliverable aspect of it, but we would want to reduce the number of registrations with a substantial failure or a full failure, or maybe we want to expand it to limited failure too. I don't know. I mean, at least if we used the terms that were defined in the study, I think it would make more sense to the community.
Thank you very much for that introduction, Susan. Any comments on Susan's suggestion? Could I just, James, thank you.
Just a brief comment, something I had sent out to the list here moments before the call started, so I don't think anyone had a chance to see it, but I would like to vote against the use of the term undeliverable, as I think that while that may apply to email or perhaps postal mail, I don't think it's a very good descriptor for the entire data record, because what is it that we are, in fact, trying to deliver? So I think that the other terms, I think, are fine. Would recommend that we stay away from undeliverable.
Thank you, James, for making that point and note that you made it on the list. I think, so just to be clear, I understand Susan as recommending to us using the term substantial failure and full failure, which would have the dual benefit of avoiding the term undeliverable. Which also, from what you say, Susan, seems to be used, that sometimes use unreliable, so it's not actually a clear term, clearly defined, whereas we've got this table here and
right.
Statistics applied to these categories, so that does seem a sensible suggestion. Kathy, please.
Can you hear me, Emily?
Yes, very clearly, thank you.
Susan, question. I don't have the NORC study in front of me. What is the difference between full failure and substantial failure?
So full failure, I'll just read it to you, failed on all criteria, undeliverable address, and unlinkable missing or patently false name, unable to locate to interview. So, you know, their terms have a full description, which I think is one of the reasons we should be using them. Substantial failure is undeliverable address and or unlinkable name, however registrant located, unable to interview registrant to obtain confirmation. And then there's a second, deliverable address but unable to link or even locate the registrant, removing any chance of interview. So if we're going to refer to the NORC study, then using their defined terms, I think would be just make it more clear to the community.
Makes sense. Let me ask you a question. Full failure, I understand. It means that not a single bit of information was usable. The person was uncontactable. And I know
right.
We can't use that anymore. I really like that term because I thought it said exactly what it was. But substantial failure, does that tell us, I mean, is that more than uncontactable? Does it create some ambiguity about what fields, what we're asking for?
On this point, the NORC study sets out four or five criteria which it explains and defines and then measures. So there is an objective, you know, whether or not we agree or disagree with the nuances, and I know from discussing this, say, with James, that I do understand that some of these definitions have been quite controversial. But the last two categories, i.e. limited failure and substantial failure, formed the basis of our recommendation from Dakar. Now, we called these, because basically what we were saying is if you roll up these two percentages, you get to a figure over 20%, and this is unacceptable, and this is the area where we ought to be focusing our resources. So while we may agree or disagree with the way it is defined, at least it is defined, it is published and has been for some time, and there is a statistically robust measure against it.
Okay.
So what really all we're trying to do, Kathy, if I could just sort of
mm-hmm.
just finish off that point is all we're trying to do is explain. We called these together, these two categories. That was what we identified in that recommendation in Dakar. And what we're saying, and by using the term unreachable or whatever we did, we confused people. So this is a much more direct reference to the table, which was, in fact, what we were referring to in our original wording.
So if I can take appropriate measures to reduce substantial failure, what are we asking it to do? Is it to create contactable records where at least one field gets through, or are we asking for more than that in terms of data accuracy?
Well, I would say that we are hoping to get it up the food chain, either to minimal failure, no failure, which are the, and I can't see the label because the table's a bit on the document. But let me just see. So there are labels in the, I think it's easier to see. There's no failure, minimal failure, limited failure, which are again, they are defined. So we're saying that anything above that line is, you know, livable with.
I think I need to go back and look at the NORC study.
It's enlightening, actually, when I reread it. But
It sounds great. I'm glad you looked at it. I'll just go back so that if I'm called on to explain it, I can explain it.
Yeah. Yes,
We're applying a kind of 80-20 rule, Kathy, and the benefit of it, I would hope, is that, you know, even if we go to limited failure, it is, well, there's a deliverable address, name linked and or located, but unable to interview registrants as well. You know, and then you start to go up to minimal failure and no failure, and again, those are defined. So I think that gives at least an objective set of criteria to aim for, because it seems that just saying we want people to be contactable confuses people, so we need to be clearer.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So I would like to suggest that we adopt the terms, I can't even remember, substantial failure and full failure in that resolution, or it's a recommendation, and then we're done on that. Thank you, Lynn. Tick from Lynn. James?
Just a recommendation that we then redefine that, or recopy, rather than just reference the NORC study, we should probably cite that and then restate the definition.
Yeah, I was wondering, actually, whether it would be worthwhile just repeating that entire table. Not obviously in the body of the recommendations, but somewhere, maybe an annex or something like that, and then we can reference it very, very clearly.
I would say, however, that the definition probably does belong in the body of the report.
Right, okay. Bung them into footnotes or something as we've done elsewhere so that we're getting them. So you can work on that. I don't think that's a controversial suggestion. I think it's fine. Kathy?
Would it make sense to have a short finding section on this as well? And that could then reference the report and the definitions and lay them right out above the way we're doing in some of the other sections. Hate to add work, but...
Yeah, I did draft a short finding. I drafted a very long finding. Then I guess I didn't send it out to you. I apologize for that. So I could, the NORC study is in the findings that I did for the data accuracy is referenced, but not these definitions. So if we want to make that finding a little bit longer and put it in both places in the finding and the body of the report.
I think that would be great.
That sounds great, Susan. Could you take that on? So you're going to circulate your findings and the amended recommendation that we've agreed to.
Right.
You're going to add in the wording of these definitions to that. I think that probably aim for 3 or so paragraphs of findings. So if you're much longer than that, take a pruning
Okay, well, I was much, I was like pages before, so yeah, I pruned it down to about 4 bullets.
Oh, great.
But this will make it a little bigger, but I think it would be worth it.
Let's take a look at it.
Okay.
Thank you. That's great. So well done, everyone. That's good progress.
So
Denise has now joined us, so what I would suggest is that we go back and resume our agenda, have Denise walk us through the rest of the staff comments, and then resume with Denise's privacy and proxy recommendations. Does that sound a good approach? Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us again, Denise. I think
sure.
We got about halfway through the staff comments last time.
Right. So I noted that I was starting with recommendation 12, that said, services. Is that where everyone would like me to start? And can you hear me okay?
We can hear you. Yes, please do so.
So I'll start with recommendation 12, and again, don't hesitate to ask questions or stop me at any time if you want to discuss something in detail. So the recommendation 12 on proxy service directs ITANN to facilitate the review of existing practices by reaching out to proxy providers to have a discussion that sets out their current processes. And so the staff notes here note that at this point it would be voluntary discussions with proxy providers, of course, since there are proxy providers that ICANN has no contractual relationship with. And advancing those conversations and trying to identify on a voluntary basis what their current practices are is something that we can certainly do. We also noted in this and the subsequent recommendations that the proxy services is a topic area that has received a lot of attention in the RNA negotiations, and DAP is pursuing a path not unlike the path I think laid out in general by the review team in incorporating some new provisions in the RAA. So depending on how the negotiations play out and ultimately what the team recommends that ICANN does, recommendations in the proxy services area may require a GNSO consensus policy. And, of course, and the staff also noted that input, in particular from registrars, on the different types of relationships that there are out there currently in the marketplace with proxy providers would be a useful element in this implementation. Moving on to recommendation 13, then, in the proxy services area, this recommendation notes that registrars should be required to disclose to ICANN their relationship with any affiliated retail proxy service provider. Again, as I noted, this is being pursued in the current RAA negotiations, and hopefully we'll have some additional staff on the phone with you next week so we can give you an update on this topic and other topics under discussion in the negotiations. Staff noted this also is a feasible recommendation and we need to explore the various ways this would actually be implemented. Recommendation 14 in the proxy services is a lengthy one that ICANN should develop a sort of voluntary best practice guidelines.
Denise, can I just
yes.
Just stop you there to say Kathy has her hand raised in the
Oh, sure. Sure, sorry.
Should we let Denise run through the proxy services comments and then come to comment,
sure.
Kathy?
Sure, yeah, that makes sense. Thanks.
Thank you.
Sure, thanks.
Go ahead.
And I'm looking at my notes rather than the Adobe window, so my apologies if I miss a raised hand. Okay, so on 14, regarding developing voluntary best practice guidelines for appropriate proxy services, and it lays out some specific elements that should be included in these best practices. An important component of the RAA negotiations, the whole relay and reveal set of issues that are being addressed in negotiations would come into play here. And depending on how the negotiations play out, that would very much influence what type of implementation would be pursued with this recommendation. The next recommendation, 15, on proxy services is that ICANN should encourage and incentivize registrars to interact with the retail service providers that adopt the best practices that were just mentioned. Staff is exploring a range of different ways that this might be implemented and what the implications are for such an implementation plan, and you know, noting there may be issues of liability and auditing and other things, as well as resources that need to be factored into this. And here I think there's just a whole range of potential options that could be explored, everything from fee reductions to creating some best practices seal of approval, and I'm sure you guys can think of other things as well, but those are some of the different ideas that staff was kicking around and looking into, and of course what happens in the negotiations and the final recommendations for this report will very much influence the direction that we go, as well as of course public comment on this. Recommendation 16 on the proxy services. The published to its policy should include an affirmative statement that clarifies that a proxy means a relationship with the registrant. A relationship in which the registrant is acting on behalf of another, so whose data is that of the agent, and agent alone obtains all rights and assumes all responsibility for the domain name and its manner of use. So the staff notes that that currently the RAA holds the registered name holder as responsible for adhering to the registrant obligation noted in the RAA, regardless of whether third party is involved. And the staff notes also indicate that in 2010, almost exactly 2 years ago, coming up, that there was a draft advisory issued. And occasionally advisories are issued to help clarify the terms and obligations in the RAA and to flesh out the shared understanding of what's expected and how terms are defined. So this particular draft, it was issued as a draft advisory for public comment. And then subsequently, and I'll send you a copy of both the advisory and the summary of the comments again, so you just have those in your notes. The reaction from the community was mixed and not particularly supportive of addressing this issue in an advisory. There were comments that it received that indicated this issue should be addressed through changes in the RAA, either through a PDP or through negotiations. And also there were comments that if this type of approach were to be taken, much more detail would be needed in defining terms, and that the advisory would need to go much further. And then that's more or less where the issue was left, as the community groups, I think most interested in this, had other things on their plate. So this was not. This was not an issue. The draft advisory was not an issue that was pursued by and worked on further by the intellectual property constituency or the NCUC or I believe the registrar constituency either. But you know, staff would be interested to know if the negotiations failed to offer the necessary clarity in this area. We'd be interested to know whether this advisory approach, whether there's interest in reviving this advisory approach and continue to work on it. So I'll stop there since that 16 is the last proxy service related recommendation and get this question.
Thank you. Yes, I've got Cassie and James in the queue to ask questions. Thank you very much for that, for running through those, Denise. Mm-hmm. So Kathy first.
Yeah, a question not just for Denise, but I guess for everybody, about procedure and how we want to handle things that are going on in parallel. Do we? The RIA negotiations are taking place. We have our recommendations. There are GNSO studies taking place, particularly on proxy and privacy, intended for future policymaking as well, and probably a myriad of other things. Do we want to change our recommendations based on what's going on with the RIA, or do we want to kind of stay at a higher level and keep and just have our recommendations and urge that whatever happens in negotiations wherever, whether it's PDP policy or RIA contract, that are, you know, that, that the goals of our recommendations be the goals of that negotiation? So kind of a question for Denise and for everyone else. Do we change our recommendations based on what's happening in real time?
Thanks, Kathy, for raising that. Should we take James's question and then discuss? James?
Hello, this is James speaking. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. So I'm, just a moment here, I'm struggling with the PDF. First couple of things, if this group is to reach out to ICANN staff for any kind of an update on RIA negotiations and or issue recommendations that might refer to ICANN's positions or support ICANN's positions in RIA negotiations, then I really have to find a way to recuse myself, I think, from that process, because one, it could open up to accusations that I'm playing both sides as an individual because I'm representing a registrar, but I'm also now weighing in on a group that's offering recommendations towards any kind of RIA negotiations. So I think that it would only make sense just so that you, this group's recommendations would be outside of that influence, and that I could still then, from, you know, in my position as a registrar, continue to advocate for what we believe to be in registrar's best interest in those negotiations. So I would see, does anyone have a problem with that, or see, or have any suggestions perhaps of ways that I could resolve that perception of conflict rather than a real conflict?
Thank you very much for raising it, James. I think that you know, this is clearly a sensitive issue for you individually and professionally. I think that your suggestion of recusing yourself is probably the cleanest way to do it. You know, mentioning the conflict or your sense of a conflict is very welcome on it. I think that it ties in with what Kathy's also saying, is that effectively we're making our recommendations against a moving system. We don't yet know how the RAA negotiations are going to pan out and how they're going to conclude. I think that, Seth, you've just said what I was going to say, which is we probably shouldn't be responding to negotiations that are in play as opposed to something finished. We're not party to those negotiations. I would expect that the simplest, cleanest way that for us to do this is just to note that there are many ongoing things like the GNSO studies and the RAA negotiations, and we would hope that our comments are, Kathy had a nice formulation for the sort of the spirit, the principles of the recommendations be, you know, taken note of. But we recognise that these are you know, ongoing at the time. Lynn, can you help us out on that?
I'm sorry, can I get to my real comment now?
Yes, go for it. Yes, of course. Sorry, I thought that.
Sorry,
was...
No, it was a real one, which is the draft advisory that that Denise mentioned, and I hate to sound confrontational on this, but I do believe that that was met with some very harsh feedback. What I would refer folks to is a session that was held in Cartagena. I believe it was Wednesday or Thursday of the Cartagena meeting in December of 2010, where a number of individuals spoke out against the release of that draft advisory in its current state, and I think I can probably even dig up the transcript or something like that. So understanding that that thing was kind of DOA when it was presented in Cartagena, I don't know that it's appropriate to resurrect it necessarily in terms of this report or to give new life to something that really is not just a dead horse, but it's a long-buried horse, in my opinion. So that's just my thinking with regard to the draft advisory and reintroducing that topic. Thanks.
Thank you, Jane. Lynn?
Yes. I just feel that on the fact that there's always going to be ongoing continuous improvement, that we have to come back to our primary purpose is to evaluate the effectiveness of WHO is. And so I feel satisfied that we've identified an issue and that we can certainly acknowledge that there are some activities in progress that aim to address it. But at this point in time, you know, the issue is there. And so I feel like that's what we need to focus on, is just making sure that we have identified anything that's hindering the effectiveness of WHO is.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Denise now to resume her run-through of staff comments, because, of course, there's a great deal of overlap in this discussion now and the discussion further on in the agenda. So are there any more questions or comments for Denise on the staff comments at this stage? Okay, I don't see any. So Denise, thank you, and please continue.
Sure. And just to clarify, it was for the team's edification that staff was noted that there was an advisory on this topic in May of 2010. I don't want people to misunderstand that I was not suggesting endorsing or encouraging this advisory approach, but simply noting that this occurred a couple of years ago. And I'll provide the advisory and the summary of comments so the team can get a clearer picture of the discussion at the time.
Thank you.
Okay, so then moving on to recommendation 17 regarding the common interface, the recommendation is to improve access to the WHO's data of .com and .net GTLDs, the thin registries. ICANN should set up a dedicated multilingual interface website to provide the WHOIS data for them. And the team provided an alternative recommendation that set up a dedicated multilingual interface website to allow unrestricted and public access to accurate and complete WHOIS information for all the GTLD domains. So the staff notes indicated that it's a feasible recommendation, but some significant sort of scoping out and investigation would be needed to create an implementation plan for this. The general idea of a single point of access is, as staff notes, has been done before by ICANN staff, similar to the centralized zone file access. That is in place. And there are some connection here with some of the staff research and work that's being done in the IRD working group. That was noted in our comments. And then staff noted some of the issues that need to be explored in setting up such an interface, including sort of capacity planning and technical scaling, as well as some potential sort of legal issues, and of course interfaces with the registrars on this as well. Make sure there's nothing else in here that I want to note for you.
Denise, can I just draw your attention and through you staff's attention to the redraft that in fact we'll be coming on to discuss later on in this call, which I hope makes a bit clearer what we had in mind, because this was one of our recommendations that confused people. And so we're really talking about the current, you know, enhancing the current Internic service. So no huge, and I think, as you're aware, having sat through the discussions, no huge relocation or reassignment of the data or anything like that. Taking it about technical capacity, because clearly if it's a success, there will be some load. But just wanted to draw your attention to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So I think the rest of our comments on that are moot at this point with the changes that the team is now considering. So that brings us to the last two recommendations, 18 and 19, that deal with internationalized domain names, IDNs. An important element of the staff comments on this is to sort of reinforce that it is not ICANN's remit to select what encoding should be applied or what mechanism should be established to support these encodings. This is fully within the role of the IETF, and ICANN would play an encouraging and supporting role to the IETF's responsibility in this area. So that's an important, I think, element to note for implementation of both 19 on IDN. Having said that, the staff has suggested is supportive and of our ability to implement both of these recommendations with IETF action. And staff proposed some specific edits to the language just to be very clear about IETF responsibilities and the terminology and responsibilities for the groups that are currently involved in this IDN effort. Anything else in 19? We noted that some additional resources and expertise would be required to implement these, but they're wholly within our ability to implement if given action by the IETF and the working group. And then I think recommendation 20, also related to the clarifications that we've requested above, but nothing additional, no additional information is needed there for implementation. I think that's it. Are there any questions on the IDN recommendation set?
Zahmad, Michael, do you have any comments on the staff comments relating to IDN recommendations, and in particular that it is, you know, the staff's observation that it is the IETF who hold responsibility for this?
This is Zahmad. I'd like to go.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thanks. As far as number 18 is concerned, basically there are possible standards which already exist, which can be used. So it's not just IETF role. The IETF actually done its part. The question is that these possibilities have not been adopted so far. Why they have not been adopted, and if there are issues, then ICANN really needs to come out and in a way suggest what these technical recommendations are missing at this time, and what more needs to be done so that IETF can actually react to that. So as far as IETF is concerned, they've already defined technical framework through which IDNs can actually be implemented.
Thank you for that clarification.
And my apologies. I think I didn't quite catch the last part of your comments, but I think I have the general gist of the. And I'd be happy to provide more, much more detailed staff, I guess, information on where things stand and why additional IETF action is needed on the front. I think there's been there's been some serious objections and concerns about the some backward compatibility issues regarding the current standards and its and the registrar's ability to make it work with their current WHOIS clients. And so quite a bit of work has been done with SICAN staff and a working group and in the IETF. They're very optimistic about the work that's going forward. And the staff is suggesting that the work be acknowledged in its recommendations as well. And if you'd like staff to provide more detailed information on why the currently available standards are not working or not being adopted, I'm happy to provide that.
Thank you.
And may I also actually point to a comment which has come through the Chinese I think CNMIC, which says that they have actually been successfully implementing IDN, internationalized registration data information. So there are best practices which already exist, technical solutions which already exist, but they've not sort of made this their way into the ICANN community in that sense, in the GTLD space. So there are technical solutions out there. So it would be actually great to hear back from ICANN about some more specialty in what are really the challenges and how do they see its role in this exercise.
Right. And I know in particular Steve Sheng on our staff has been working for a few years on this issue and has been also working closely with CCNIC and is well aware of their efforts as well. Would it be useful, Sarmad, do you think, if we got you on the phone with Steve to have a more extended discussion? Would that be more useful than simply sending you written information?
Yes.
You'll find, I think, Steve Sheng is very well versed in this area, and perhaps if we get you on the phone with him, we can quickly identify where there's a difference of opinion or what additional steps staff feels it can take in this area.
Thank you. Kathy? Yeah, regarding that offer, which is a great one, Denise, there is a small team that's working on this issue, so it might be good to set up the meeting between Steve and Sarmad and Michael and Wilfried and myself. Does anybody disagree with that? And second, does this raise any of the concerns that James raised, say, on the proxy privacy issue? Because it's, again, a system in motion. We are trying to find out the status and talk to ICANN staff about it. But to me, it doesn't seem to raise the same kind of level of concern, but I just wanted to ask everyone else.
Thanks, Kathy. I don't see anybody asking the floor on that. So can we take as an action item to follow up and set up a telephone conversation between Steve Cheng of staff and the small group looking at IDNs? Obviously, we're now starting to feel time pressure because we have set ourselves the target of finishing this, finalising the report by the end of this month. So we just need to note that. But thank you for that offer, Denise. And also thank you for running through the staff comments. Do you have any other comments to make?
I don't.
Well, I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the team for joining the call and taking us through those comments, which is very valuable.
Sure, happy to do it.
Okay, let's discuss proxy and privacy recommendations. I've seen a lot of evidence of activity from that small group who were tasked to try to amalgamate what we're recommending on proxy and privacy services. I think the latest draft was circulated by you, Kathy, a few moments before the call. Can I ask for somebody from that small team to take us through where we are, what your status is, and what guidance or comments you're seeking from us now? I noted particularly, Kathy, that you felt that you were still in discussion and that you're not at the point of finalising text yet. Seth, is this something that you could take us through?
Well, I think the problem is that we haven't seen Kathy's draft until just now.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of new material, so, you know, I think we, you know, I'm not sure I can comment other than, you know, we may have to consider it as a group.
Yeah. Okay, so it might be more effective use of our time to just note that progress is ongoing, that there's you know, there's developments on the draft. Kathy?
Yeah, I think that's it, that there is good progress, but there's still kind of work on some of the fundamentals that we're still doing. But if people want to review the progress, then go ahead. Please do. And I'm sorry to have gotten my draft out so late. I truly apologize for that. I think we're close.
Okay. I'm not sure if actually we've got... Does anybody not on that that you'd like to feed into their discussions? I can put it that way. I don't see anybody coming forward. Does anybody from the small group want to make any points? My sense is actually that it's probably the best use of time now to say thank you all for your work on this, noting that you are making substantive progress and you still need to iron out the language. I also note that Kathy's latest draft fleshes out the findings and actually references where the wording comes from, which is appreciated. There's going to be some... there seems to be a knotty issue around the last paragraph, and also there's some new language. So why don't we take as an action that small group to assimilate the latest draft and to try to present to the group, or aim to present to the group, an agreed draft by the end of this week. Is that going to be doable?
Yeah, I do. This is Seth. I do have some concerns because, although because it seems like we're taking a step back after we took a step forward, and you know, I know these new additions are important, but you know, none of the group have had a chance to consider
them. I think you have some more discussions to do amongst yourselves. I note that Lynn has volunteered on the chat to help with the draft. I very much appreciate that. It might well be that we come back and slug it out in the large group, but let's give the group the chance to take on board the latest version and work on that. I mean, it's got to be, you know, I'll repeat as I have before, we have the fallback position of what we agreed in Dakar. If we're not able to make progress, then that's where we will end up. That said, I'm encouraged by the progress that I see here. And I think that there is a will, a strong will from the team working on this to find a way through. Susan?
You've said what we agreed to in Dakar, but are we talking about what we agreed to in Dakar or what we put in the draft final?
Draft final recommend, you know, where, our draft report, thanks. Okay. Thank you for pointing that
out. I want
to
make sure what I'm arguing for here.
No, I'm still scarred from the from the discussions in Dakar. That's probably why it sprang to mind.
Right.
Okay.
And the other thing is, you know, the last paragraph seems to be very contentious with the group. You know, that the entity in the domain name registration obtains all rights and assumes all responsibility. And we did have that in the previous, we agreed to that at some point in our discussions, but I'm wondering if we shouldn't have that discussion today to sort of, because I thought, I have a feeling that's one of the most contentious paragraphs in this draft, but if maybe the whole group doesn't want to discuss it.
Well, I think it's not a question of not wanting to discuss it. I think it's probably the better use of all of our time is if you guys slug this one out in your small group. If it helps, my recollection is the same as yours, Susan. I thought that we had, I think that this was part of our definitions work that we were doing. And also the fundamental reason why originally we were content to leave proxy recommendations on a voluntary basis, because I think it was James's comment back in Marina Del Rey, is that there's a very clear difference between proxy services and privacy services, in that proxies do stand in the shoes of the registrant and thereby assume liability. I don't really understand the basis of the concerns. We can certainly air this here if it will be helpful, but maybe a better use of time is to go back to what we said in our draft report and see if we can find it.
Okay.
So good work, guys. Thank you. Can see some real progress on that, and I like the way that you're using the time zone differences to work this around the clock. So can we set a target, please, for sort of end of Friday for a revised draft, even if it's, you know, even if we're still looking at comments, but something that you are all reasonably comfortable with. So let's do, in other words, let's do another iteration and share it with the rest of the review team. Okay. I'm taking silence as assent there. So we'll Alice, if you can note that action point, that would be good. Right, the next is wording on recommendations 3 and 17. I've seen some comments from Peter on this. Just a reminder, this was wording that I circulated probably a couple of weeks ago now to the review team, because I was tasked to hold the pen on the strategic priority one. Peter came across with something that I think we agreed, and in fact it's later on in this later on in the agenda, is our compliance recommendations. We had actually agreed to separate the two, and I've probably just done that imperfectly. I can preempt the discussion on compliance recommendations to say we haven't done anything. I think at the moment we're awaiting some information from the compliance team. We're awaiting that. And then I think that will influence our findings and then some recommendations. So subject to Peter's comment, which I agree with, are there any other comments on the draft findings and recommendations of 3?
Emily, it's Kathy.
Uh-huh.
Recommendation 3 is the new number or the old number? Is this the strategic priority?
Yeah, it's the strategic priority one. I actually think the new number is going to be 1.
Okay. And so the underlying text is the one that's up now on the board, right?
That's right, yes.
And I did have a question about that.
Sure.
It's right above, it's in the findings section on the second page, right above the recommendation. And it's a line that seems pretty, for reasons explained above, the WHO's review team finds the historic staff figures provided recently by ICANN to lack credibility and to paint a misleading picture to the community and to governments.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wanted to, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm not quite sure what that's referring to.
Well, it came that there. Denise and I have been in correspondence about staff figures in compliance over the years. We had a presentation from Stacey way back at the beginning of our work in January 2011, where we were given historic figures on staffing. Which was, if I probably won't remember the figures exactly, but it was, you know, they started up in 2007 with two staff. By 2010, there were 10 staff. Then by 2011, when they were talking to us, they were down to 6, including a couple of temps. The head of compliance was a vacant position, and they were struggling to fill vacant roles and reliant on temporary staff. So there is a, however, when we got the figures just recently from the compliance team, it showed a beautiful curve going up from 2 originally, a steady increase over the years, and in particular 2010 did not show 10 people, it showed, I can't remember, 5. So what it did was it presented a beautiful picture of steady growth, whereas in fact the presentation that we got from compliance a year previously suggested that it was actually a little bit more of a rocky road, and that the figures of staff now are just only just nudging over what they were 2 years ago, which is clearly a very different picture.
Well, if you need a hand drafting this
sure.
narrative for the report, it sounds like it's actually a report section.
I'm awaiting updated figures on a number of things, including budget spend from ICANN compliance, budget versus actuals, details of vacant positions, details of temporary staff, organizational charts over the years, and I'm still awaiting that data. I agree with you. I think it will turn into a more substantive section. I do also agree with you that, you know, looking at the wording there, it seems rather strong. Clearly, if we're making that those sort of strong statements, we'll need a very heavy evidence base
to
back it up. So thank you for bringing that up. I've got Denise and Susan.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify here. So some of the confusion on staffing numbers arose, and I can't recall, actually, I mean, we've had lots of emails going back and forth. I can't remember if team was where the team was copied and where they weren't, but just for the sake of clarity, the Stacey's initial discussion with the team when at your first meeting in London included a slide that showed historic staffing, and she included some temporary contractors in her staffing figures. Subsequently, the staffing chart that compliance provided the team only included full-time compliance staff, and so there was a discrepancy because of the figures because of that. And I think the last thing that the compliance gave you breaks out full-time and temporary. So I think we're set.
I think
on
that post-dates the drafting of this section, actually.
Right, right.
So I think
just in terms of temporary and full-time historic staffing, you've got everything you need. I think we've got clarity on all that. And now what you're waiting for is the last 3 years of budget and spend numbers and some additional information on vacancies, time of vacancies,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly right. So
okay.
I'm awaiting that. And, yes, thank you for reminding me of the timing of when this updated information came through.
I just want to make sure that I had my to-do list correct. So I think we're on the same page, right? Okay,
yeah,
thanks.
We are. Thank you. And actually, Alice, I don't know whether you've got the relevant tables, but perhaps we could just circulate to the rest of the review team, because like you, Denise, I think, and particularly I might have been guilty of forgetting my copying protocols and not copying in appropriate people. So we should just make sure that, that the review team have all of those figures. Okay, Susan.
So to jump to a different issue within this recommendation, we've completely lost the language the board should ensure that a senior member of the executive team is responsible for overseeing who is compliant. Or maybe it's there and I'm not recognizing it.
No,
but
and I think that we probably also need to, I think there's probably going to be more discussion on this. There's been a theme, hasn't there, about where compliance sits within the organization. And sorry, I cut you off, Susan, so please continue what you were saying.
No, that's fine. I mean, a few weeks ago, I was advocating to make this not just a senior board member or a senior member, but make it the CEO, partially on the response, the comments from the staff, where it was acknowledged that you know, John Jeffries was responsible for the for who is compliant. So, and that may be true, but I think we all recognize that a higher level person, whether it be a board committee or the CEO, would be more appropriate and more apt to be able to take the actions needed to improve who is. So,
and, yeah, I think that to clarify and for the record, this isn't in any way a criticism of John Jeffrey or his role. I think there was a comment, I think, in the public forum, Susan, I'm not sure, I can't remember who made it, but it pointed out that a general counsel and a senior member of the executive, general counsel will have fiduciary duties to the company to reduce risk and make sure that you know it is not putting itself in line of litigation, if you like, and that role itself has many conflicts with a head of compliance, and there seemed to be a. There is a theme in some of the comments to take the compliance function into a kind of a bubble or some sort of structurally different section of the organisation, so that you have some kind of independence built in. I think that this recommendation needs to be developed, but we do need to have that discussion. I think we've skirted around it a bit, and I'm not quite sure the best way to take this forward. Perhaps on our next call we can schedule some time, because I still think that that we haven't as a group got our minds around this.
We agreed to, you know, at least naming senior member of the executive team.
Yes.
So, I mean, I could easily see, I mean, I like the new wording better, but once again, my fear is they'll just check it off the list when, yes, they are all working hard on who is, we get that, but we all need more work and more priority and more strategic priority. So,
yeah.
I think, so maybe I should just propose some language.
If you could, mm-hmm. and I'm happy to take on board, say, Kathy's point. I know that Peter and I have not managed to have any communication about this. There's a small group of us looking at compliance. I think Peter and Bill and neither of them are on the call, part of that. So please do propose some language, Susan.
Okay.
And I can then take the action to update this draft, taking on board your comments and Kathy's comments prior to our next call.
Okay, great.
And I am also awaiting, as Denise said, figures on budget and spend and on vacant positions, which I think will flesh out some of the the findings. It might be a larger section, but I plan to spend some time on that. It might not be before our next call, but it will be before the one after. Okay. So, are there any more comments on that? Thank you both for that. In that case, let's look at recommendation 17, new wording. Can we get that up on the screen, please, Alice? This, as a reminder, is the famous lookup where we had proposed two alternatives. I think in Costa Rica we came down on one single recommendation, and we just wanted to make it clearer that we weren't talking about some wholesale PDP type of thing. We're just talking about incremental operational improvement. So that's the proposed text.
Emily, it's Kathy.
Hi, Kathy.
Do you think, and everybody tell me if this is a terrible idea, do you think it would be a good idea to run this one by ICANN's staff, not for their approval, but to see if there's any clarification, any questions that they have, since it's a direct, this is a very clear implementation directive. And it's changed now. You know, now we've picked an option and we've clarified, you know, and it's very, very clear. So just to run it by them and see what their feedback is. It could be in writing.
That would be, I'd have no objections to that. Denise, I think we just discussed this in our recent conversation. That would be doable, wouldn't it?
I'm happy to pursue some additional staff comments on this recommendation 17.
Thank you. It doesn't have to be lengthy, but just as you've done before, if you can just highlight areas where it's not clear or where, I mean, really, if I could just send one message through this, is that we're really not in a radical policy change here. It really is, as Kathy says, implementation. And so we're keen to have views on that. Right, thank you. Any other comments, any other edits that want to be made on the language? Are we reasonably comfortable with it? Are we able to sign off this language, subject to any feedback we may get from staff on implementation? Any objections to that?
Emily, Kathy, there were a few little things I wanted to send to you.
Great, okay.
Nothing big, just little.
Fine. Well, why don't we? Could you do that? Copy the list, and we can just sort of give it another iteration. I'd quite like to reduce, if I may, Kathy. Are they substantive or are they just sort of edity type of things?
Edity type things.
Could we? I'd quite like to get it off the list of things that we. We have to discuss on our to-do list. I'll tell you what, circulate your comments, and then if we think that they substantively change things, we'll put it back on the agenda. Otherwise, let's take this as resolved. Okay. And it's just subject to your edits and subject to feedback from staff on implementation. Brilliant. Okay, text on accreditation and hierarchy of enforcement. Goodness. Does anyone know what that is?
What's that?
Kathy, I think this might be you.
I'm going to bump this to James because he has the most recent material, and with apologies, due to the holiday, we haven't finished syncing on that.
No. Fine. James?
Hi, I'll jump in. This is James speaking.
Thank
and
you.
I did send this message to the group following our last call, which indicates that my recollection of a slide, and I think, hello?
Yes, I remember now. This is about graduated sanctions, isn't it?
This is about graduation sanctions. Yes. Accreditation is probably the wrong word. As Kathy noted last week, a better description would have been graduated sanctions or de-accreditation.
Yeah.
So actually, as part of our discussion, there was a slide in Costa Rica that Maggie put out with a number of steps, that initial steps that were taken by compliance when the registrar had a problem or an issue that would lead up to an escalating threshold whereby a breach letter was sent. At that point, the registrar was considered to be not in good standing, and the breach letter led to a specific recommendation or requirement, sorry, to cure a specific practice or situation, followed by suspension, followed by de-accreditation. The question that I put to the group was whether there should be something in between the breach letter and suspension, some sort of financial penalty or, you know, something along those lines. And I think the only response that it received to that message was from Bill, who is not here today, but said something to the effect of was supportive of the idea of an SLA for registrars, particularly with regard to who is. And I think that, you know, from our registrar's perspective, we would gladly accept an SLA for who is availability because, as I mentioned, we go to a lot of lengths and a lot of expense to keep our WHOIS systems up and running and responsive. I can't say that that is true for all registrars. So, for example, there would be financial penalties somewhere in between a breach letter, an uncured situation laid out in a breach letter, and suspension. So this is a note that I had. I think someone posted the slide from Maggie from Costa Rica, and then Bill had one response about SLAs. And that's basically what happened on this issue since our last call.
That's brilliant. Thank you. If there's no other people wanting to take the floor, I have one comment and suggestion, if I may. And that's basically, I think I didn't respond because I thought this all sounds very sensible, and I like the idea of SLAs. I wonder whether it's always attractive to think in terms of penalties, but also whether we could, you know, also think in terms of incentives. So, for example, if we did have agreed SLAs for a registrar that was fully compliant with the SLAs, would there be some sort of incentive, probably financial, that went with that, you know, white hat behavior? James?
Well, certainly there could be a reward part of an SLA or a bonus relative to exceeding the metrics of an SLA. But for that to be properly implemented in such a way that it wasn't abused, I think that they would need to have some very clear measurables. And I'm saying this with an eye towards my friend from the registries, where registries, GTLD registries, typically operate under SLA with ICANN. However, most of their service levels are self-reporting. And therefore, I think a lot of folks kind of wink and nod that a lot of those metrics are what the registry's opinion of their performance might be. So more like a self-assessment than an actual grade.
So, James, is your view that it would just be too complex to go there, or that we could perhaps leave the development? Who would do the development of SLAs? Would that be an RAA thing, or would it be a GNSO action point?
That would definitely have to be a GNSO, and it would definitely have to come through a PDP or RAA negotiations. One of the thoughts might be, for example, to have a rebate that is at stake. So, for example, there's a certain amount of dollars involved for a registrar to be an accredited registrar, and I'm sure it's just more of a token fee that is paid to ICANN. It certainly is not significant when compared to the registration fees. And so if something like that were on the table, that you would lose as part of an SLA, as opposed to being charged additional fines. I mean, all of those things could be in play. But this is details that I think would be appropriate for this group to weigh in on. I think that the remit of this group would simply say there seems to be a gap between a breach letter and suspension that could be filled with financial penalties / SLAs. This is something that ICANN should consider developing.
Great. Thank you. Kathy? I totally agree with what James just said at the end. I think if we go down the path of SLAs, we're going into a lot of detail.
Absolutely. First of all, we don't have time. Second of all, it's not within our remit, and this is something that's heading towards the PDP anyway. So if we can just give some high-level guidance in that way. I think all of my intention was to just keep mentioning incentives when we're talking about penalties as well.
Yes,
because
good.
You know, there should be a kind of holistic approach. Okay, well, thank you very much for that update and for the progress. That seems to be heading in a very positive direction. What's next? Can you propose some work? Who's got the pen on this? Is this you, James?
I can say that I have the pen on this.
Okay, so could
you... Doesn't make it true. But
so
I'll reach out to that group and...
Yeah. So why don't we get some language now? We seem to be agreed on the approach, and let's. It doesn't seem to be a wholesale redrafting thing. It's just some tweaking.
Yeah, I'll try to come up with something by our next call.
Thank you. Okay, IDN recommendations. Where are we? I know that Michael's struggling with his connection. Sarmad?
Yep.
Do you have any updates?
So we've actually recently started discussing this. I think it's probably attributed to my answer because of some internal work. There are two things which need to be done. The recommendations need to be clarified. So number 18 especially, there was some comments on some people not understanding what is being asked. So I think we need to reword that. And I think there's now an internal draft, at least for recommendation 18, which we have. We will finalize. There is also some internal discussion on within the smaller group on maybe clarifying or simplifying the next two recommendations as well, the number 19 and 20. Though there is we should probably talk to Steve Shen and I think staff and get their feedback, and then I guess we should then come up with a final draft for this. There's some edits which need to go in the main write-up as well, which precedes the recommendations, and there was at least one error in that which needs to be corrected, and I actually am mindful of that, and I'll actually go back and do those changes as well perhaps this week. Again, sorry for not showing up for a couple of meetings, but it's very late for me. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I've sort of been a bit busy because of some internal work. So I've not done too much work on this lately, but I should get back on finishing this up this week.
Thank you very much for that update, Sarmad, and of course, as we're all volunteers, we're constantly balancing the different pressures, also the challenges of having a global team in different time zones. So it's very much understood, and pleased to hear that things are underway. Michael?
Just very, very briefly, I mostly agree with Sarmat, and we have discussed such issues in San Jose. I would like maybe to simplify and to clarify also all three recommendations in IDM. And I think if we have the call in the beginning of the next week, we will have the final and agreed version by the end of the next week.
That's great. Thank you. We can note as an action that we will have the final. So it will not be our next call, but the one after that, where we will have some text to consider.
Yeah, well, it depends upon when we will have a conference call with Ms. Chen.
Absolutely. So, Alice, if you could note that there will be the small group have a call to be scheduled with Steve Chen, that they are working on simplifying and clarifying the draft recommendations and hope to be sharing language with us towards the end of next week. Clearly, that will also depend on the scheduling of the call, the timing of that. So let's just keep an eye on that, and thank you, people, for the update. Timeframes and implementation paths. Susan, you circulated some text. Thank you for doing that. I noted that Peter had some comments on that, which were quite similar to the conversation we had on the call last time, that we were looking for more general, because the only wording we have on timing at the moment is in this sort of subsection of a recommendation on something else. I think it's accuracy. So, Susan, do you have any clarification for us?
There is, in the AOC, and Lynn had pointed this out a couple weeks ago, too. She'd highlighted it. ICANN has 6 months to act on the recommendation. It doesn't mean that they're going to implement, but I still would like to, well, first of all, I apologize because I mixed up the number of the recommendations. It's recommendation 7, and I had put it down as 5, so that was totally confusing to myself. So I finally figured out what I'd done. And I thought Peter's question was a good one in that, you know, is this for all the recommendations or just the data accuracy? And I guess when I've read recommendation 7, even though it was under data accuracy, I've always thought it was for all of the WHOIS recommendations we're making, because we'll want to know, you know, what the latest status is. But so we, you know, the team should decide that. And then, you know, I still would like to require a status report within 3 months, just so that we know, you know, A, progress is being made, and that the plans and timeline make sense, because what we don't want to do is have business as usual. I don't think ICANN's going to do that. I think, you know, they're taking this seriously. The AOC takes it seriously. But it's just another insurance policy for me.
Susan, I think, and thank you also, Lynn, for digging out that wording from the AOC. Yes, I think we're probably all on the same page, Susan. We're thinking about this as a general overarching measure that should guide the response. I actually think it's already in progress from based on our meeting with the board and Denise's input there, that the staff are already hard at work in developing metrics and a plan. So I think that this is it's just something that ought to be there and more generally placed, so that it's clear. Okay. I'm not sure whether any follow-up action is required on that point, except to make it more general, because I think that we're in agreement. The wording that you circulated seemed to be seemed to be fine. I didn't see any adverse events at all.
So should we just pull it out of data accuracy and put it as the last? Somehow, to me, it would fit as the very last recommendation.
That's a good suggestion.
And after you've done all of this, we want you to then report back to us or to the community. I keep thinking it's going to be us, but it won't.
No, it won't. It'll be somebody else.
And thank God.
No. So, yes, good suggestion. I don't see any objections to that. Let's do that. We will pull that out. So, Alice, could you record that, a decision, that the language on timeframes and implementation paths is adopted, that it will be a separate recommendation at the end of the recommendation, you know, coming last. Kathy?
Emily, can I ask a quick question, Kathy?
Of course, yes.
Does the 3 months start after the close of the next round of public comment?
Well, we sort of discussed that. I mean, I keep saying that, you know, from the time the report is published, because I think they can work in concert with the public comment period. And like Emily just said, they are already working on all this. So, and in me, when I read the AOC, and you know, it's posted there too. I mean, it's on the Adobe Room. It doesn't say anything about comment periods or anything. It's 6 months. So I don't. Maybe we need clarification from Denise on when that countdown starts.
Yeah, I think that the key thing is that they're. Oh, Denise, please.
It's 6 months from when the board receives your final report.
So I think we should just keep that standard and not worry about the comment period.
Okay, so just lift the timing from the AOC so that there's no divergence in the time frames, probably. Okay. Great. I think the next one is compliance recommendations, which I covered off earlier by admitting that there's been no progress. I think we're partly awaiting just a closing off of some open issues which are in discussion between ourselves and compliance. But there is actually more work to be done. And what I'd appreciate, Alice, is if you could take an action to organise a call between the small group working on compliance to just pull together findings and recommendations and have a brief discussion before we do that, because also Peter's in Australia, we have not had the opportunity for any substantive discussions yet. So if you could schedule a call between us to take place in the next week or so. So it might be that we're not getting to our next meeting, but we're getting to the one after that with wording. Okay. So next steps, we have our action items noted. The pen holders, we all know who we are. Thank you for progress. We've made good progress this week, and we just have to keep kind of trudging forward. I've got two items of AOB. One I think is fairly quick, which is scheduling, and the other is a more substantive point on data validation, which forms part of accuracy. So can we take the scheduling one first? That is scheduling for the staff call, wasn't it, Kathy? Or Alice? I can't remember who asked.
Hey, with me. Hi, Emily. Just to say, according to the Doodle poll, the most convenient time slot is on Monday 16th, so next Monday at 10:30 p.m. Universal Time. And I only have Susan, Peter, Kathy, and Seth in green for that. So I just wanted to have a show of hands in the Adobe room, maybe, just to confirm that you are you wish to schedule this call at that time. If any of you can join, just please show your hand and raise your hands.
Please restate the time.
It's 10:30 p.m. UTC. 10:30
p.m. Universal Time. So I've added a link to a time and date link in case you need to check your local time. Seth,
I'm not
James.
Disagreeing. I'm just saying I'm unavailable for that call.
Okay. Seth, James, anyone
James,
else?
You have a comment?
Since I may be chairing it, can I ask what the purpose is of the call? I'm happy to chair it if Emily is not with us, but I'm now even more confused about what the purpose might be.
Well, the purpose of this call is to have the subject matter experts from ICANN staff to, just go deeper into discussions on some of the recommendations.
I think, Denise, it was your line's a bit unclear at the moment. I think it's just also to update on the status of the RAA negotiations is what you said,
right.
Isn't it?
Right.
But it's been raised. I thought we talked earlier that this may actually raise some concerns now, both with individual members of the team and the team itself. So is it still a discussion that we want to have? Do we have specific questions that we want to raise?
No, I think that's a very fair point, Kathy. I think
should I even attend that call?
No. I think if you, feel any level of discomfort.
I don't think it's only discussion of what's going on in the RAA. I think.
Oh, no, no. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that it was only that. I was saying if you wanted more information on, for example, the specifics about relay and reveal that were being discussed, we could have staff on the phone to share with that. But I think the key point of the call was to allow you to get more information from staff on some of the challenges or processes that might be involved in some of the recommendations, what the limitations were on the staff side, when a PDP would have to be triggered, some of those questions that some team members have had. This is entirely up to you, but so we were looking at this as a way of responding to the more detailed queries that some team members seem to still have on some of the recommendations and their potential implementation.
Okay.
And it would be great to get a more, a well-articulated sort of agenda items in advance of this call so we can make sure we have the right staff on the phone to address the issues that are still of interest to the team members.
Mm-hmm. I felt the last call was very useful, and unfortunately I had to miss the first half hour of it, but there was definitely some disconnects I didn't understand. And then we ran out of time. So if possible, I would like to still schedule that call. I think, my viewpoint after, a year and a half of looking at this and how many years of living with Inaccurate Who is that there are some things that ICANN could be doing now based on the current RAA, not on the we would not have to get into the discussions of the negotiating the new RAA. So I would like to hear a stronger viewpoint and explanation from ICANN staff on some of those issues. If you'd like me to put together my agenda points, I could do that and send it to the group.
Thank you.
That'd be great.
I think let's go ahead with the call. I encourage you to, because I'm not going to be on the call, to circulate agenda items. There's clearly feedback on recommendation 17 as redrafted, which we've just asked for, so that should be on the agenda. But any other items that you'd like to discuss, give Denise a heads up as far in advance as you can, and that will make the best use of the time. Okay. Validation. Let's just deal with this. You introduced it, Susan, as something it's not just come up in, not only come up in the letter from Larry Strickling, but of course in many of the public comments as well.
Right.
If I can try to, just because we're over time and I said we'd be stopping absolutely on the half hour, which of course we haven't, but if I could just make a suggestion for a way forward on this. which is that there needs to be some discussion of it in our findings or preamble to data accuracy, that if we're not recommending validation or if we are, we probably need to give some agenda time up to this on our next call, and maybe we could just have it as an agenda item for the next call to specifically discuss whether we're going to go there on data validation. Would that be a satisfactory response?
Yes. I just think that we need, because it came from Larry Strickling and he's had some influence on our group, that we should at least recognize it in the report.
Yeah. And other commentators as well. So I think there's probably two substantive issues that we should probably give some time to next call, because I think we'll be awaiting language on several things. So we will be able to use our time to have some substantive discussion. I suggest that we say data validation is one, compliance and where we're going on compliance is another, and also we may be able to cover proxy and privacy, but that's probably going to wait until next time. I think we'll be waiting language. Okay. So with that, thank you all very much for your participation as ever, and thank you for your work in between calls. Let's keep up the momentum. I'm going to be in Sweden next Wednesday. I'm not sure of the timing of our next call, but it may be that I'm not available. So I just thought I'd give you a heads up on that. But meantime, let's work away and progress our action items. I think that, Alice, your thing of circulating the action items with big green ticks and things like that is very useful to motivate people. So if that could be done, that would be great.
Okay, will do.
Okay. Thank you all very much, and good evening or good morning, whatever it is for you.
Thanks, Emily. Good
call.
Thanks,
Emily.
Thank you, bye.